welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation. I'm here with Tristan Vick.
How's it going, everybody?
And today we're also joined by our first ever guest, FC Dallas' own Carter Baum. How's it going, Carter?
It's going great. How about you guys?
Can't complain.
Doing well.
For those of you that may not know him, Carter is the digital content manager for FC Dallas. Hey, Carter, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your role at FC Dallas?
Yeah, I am Dallas, born and raised. Went to high school, Plano East High School. Went to school at OU. And I grew up playing hockey, kind of knew I wanted to stick in sports and maybe not. I got to the point where I couldn't play anymore. Every athlete reaches that point, but knew I wanted to stick in sports, kind of went the sports journalism route and started with interning with the minor league hockey team in Oklahoma City, the same kind of company that owned them, began the USL team that is now FC Dallas's affiliate, the OKC Energy, and just kind of went from there. I knew who Daniel Robertson, my previous boss, through prior relationships, and he had an opening, kind of told me to apply, and the rest is kind of history. It was a great chance for me to move back home, and I've been here in Dallas for a little over 2 years now, and kind of readjusting. Of course, Daniel's moved on over to Italy, and now it's kind of me and some newer faces around the club, and a lot of what we do is everything digital that you see. I mean, Twitter, Facebook, everything social is handled under our department. And then me specifically, I oversee our website, all of our website content, some of our video content as well as the kind of nitty gritty stuff like email platforms. If you get marketing emails from FC Dallas, that's me hitting send on most of those. I'm sorry. But yeah, anything kind of under the digital realm is our forte.
Very cool. So let's kind of get into this show. We're going to talk a little bit about the Sporting Kansas City versus FC Dallas game. Going to try to talk about it as little as possible. It's yet another loss for FC Dallas, so we won't dwell on it. And then after that, we're going to do a little Q&A with Carter. And then after that, we're going to try to get to know the players a little bit better, put a little human face on them by seeing if we can't ask Carter some questions about them. So,
sounds good.
Perfect.
Tristan, why don't you tell us about the game?
Yeah, so FC Dallas loses 2-0, and just like in the past, it's off of set pieces. Our defense looked better, but there's still lots of gaps. And both goals were conceded off set pieces. And in the end, we're creating opportunities, which is good from an offensive standpoint. But at the same time, the opportunities that we're creating, either we're just missing posts or we're just missing the net. But at the same time, there should be some finishing. And Arruti can't do it all. Coleman had some threatening runs. But again, something's just not clicking on the team. So no goals. Lots of possession, but again, set pieces, yet again, cause our defense to succumb. There definitely was a lot of rest in between the matches. No midweek games, which is nice change of pace from last season. I don't know how much the heat factored into things. Carter can probably give us a better sense of the conditioning regimen of the players, which obviously in Frisco is pretty crazy. But I thought, without a doubt, some of the players in the midfield look a little bit tired. I think there's different levels of motivation at times, which can be kind of obvious. But at the same time, that final third wasn't clinical that we'd had in the first half of the season.
As far as the weather goes, I mean, it was a beautiful night in Kansas City. It was cool off right before kick. But yeah, like you mentioned, Tristan, just not everything clicking for the club. I mean, that's something that they're trying to address, obviously, this week before two games in kind of a short span. But definitely, you saw it, I saw it, we all kind of saw it. There's just something wasn't right, and it's not something we traditionally see from Oscar Pereja coach clubs. I mean, this team's kind of in a rut right now, and it's all about just kind of persevering and climbing out of that at some point. But yeah, right now, something isn't there, and I myself have no idea what to put that on.
I think it's telling whenever somebody like Coy Kraft gets a run out, and Coy hasn't seen the field in the senior squad in the league for almost a year now, about 11 months. So I think that shows that we're not the only people that are kind of curious as to why the form's dropped off. I think Pereja knows that something's not clicking as well. So Hopefully they've sorted out in training and they can get it back this week with a midweek fixture against Houston, though.
I will say for Coy Kraft, he hasn't seen a whole lot of MLS time in the last year, like you said, but he's someone who has really continued to grow over the course of the last few weeks in training. I think he's kind of hitting that corner. He knows it's an important year for him, and especially down the stretch. He's gone down and played some USL minutes every now and then, but this is kind of his time to shine, and he knows that he has to really get something going. And we watching training tonight a little bit before leaving the office, it just, he continues to kind of show moments of brilliance in training. And I think Oscar and everyone wants to kind of see what he has in a game situation. And I think that's something you might see a little bit more over the next few weeks, just to see what's there as you continue to experiment with what works and what doesn't.
Sporting Kansas City was definitely a tough opponent to try to bounce back against. And
they're not Sporting KC is not the team you want to play on the road when you have a rough patch of form. Whereas our team's been totally decimated by injuries and international call-ups, besides Dom Dwyer, who they ended up trading, which shows you how much they thought of him. The only player that's really been out was Zusi and a little bit of Ike Opara, I think. But beyond that, they've had a pretty steady squad throughout the season. So definitely not the right team to right the ship on, but still a team that we should be playing at the same level of getting at least a draw.
For sure. We're going to move right along in the interest of time. We're going to basically move on to our player stock section. We're going to each mention a player or two that we think had a good game or a bad game. So, Carter, if our players were a stock, which player would you be buying after that game?
I would be buying more of Jesse Gonzalez. I think he had a good kind of bounce back performance. Yeah, two goals allowed, but neither one of them really kind of attributed to him directly. That first one off of the corner kick, I mean, anytime a striker's left alone in the box, the goalkeeper doesn't have a whole lot he can do. And I thought the saves that he did have were very strong. And we've seen kind of maybe a national team camp almost hangover from Jesse Gonzalez. Just something wasn't quite there, but I really liked his performance in Kansas City, and I thought it was a good bounce back for him.
I won't make you sell any players since you see them every day. But
I appreciate that.
But I definitely think that Grana has a similar type of all-star game hangover, not necessarily Gold Cup hangover, and was at fault in missing the marking on some of those free kicks and set pieces. And I think if you're going back and watching the tape, I think Pareja is going to notice that, and hopefully he gets onto him. He's a very experienced player, so he'll definitely be motivated to prove it again. But I would be selling some Grana in the hopes that he improves quickly, because he was a surprise this season that we really weren't expecting, and we hope he gets back to that early season form.
Do you have any players that you'd be buying, Tristan?
I really liked Barrios. I thought he had some good runs and was able to get free. He definitely gets overshadowed sometimes because of his size, but I thought that he had some great runs and some good crosses as well. And so there's that going for him. And then I also think Coleman's pace and the way that he was linking up going through the middle looked threatening. And if you can go up against a backline like Houston, who's pretty stingy, but if you get your opportunities, you can definitely get, if you take your opportunities, you're going to be able to do it through pace. And so I'd love to see that Coleman matchup. Maybe he draws Beasley out and kind of occupies him for the rest of, or kind of keeps his mind on two people as opposed to just that left side.
Sure. Personally, I agree with Carter. I would be buying Jesse Gonzalez. Great game. He had an MLS Save of the Week candidate, and he bailed the team out on many occasions during the night. And as far as selling, this was a tough one for me. I think I'd probably have to sell the left side of Figueroa and Lamar. They seemed to get run over by Zusi and company all night, and didn't really have an answer for covering that going back.
Sounds good.
The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. men's national team news and coverage. All right, so let's transition into question and answer time with Carter. Tristan, you want to start us off here?
Yep. So, Carter, you've been with the club for a couple years now. In that time, they've had success at basically all levels of the club, from academy to the senior squad. In your opinion, this season, we've obviously been shaken up by injuries and international call-ups, but from what you see, does the shakeup and the training schedule, what works, what doesn't? You made it sound kind of like the coaching staff is a little bit confused, but are some of the players out there taking charge of it and kind of putting the onus on themselves versus the coaching staff? What's the players' reaction to this drop in form?
I think the players are definitely looking inward. Oscar's he's very hard on himself after games and stuff, but the players do just as much as that. I mean, they really, especially after these last two games, have said, you know, we have to be better. It's a matter of, like we talked about with the Sporting game specifically, you know, marking in the box off of set pieces, marking wherever. And, you know, that can be coached up as much as you want during the week. But if the players don't execute it in the game, the coaches can't do a whole lot about that. These players are definitely, they're kind of feeling the urgency to get some more results, get a string of results going. And I think they're putting it on themselves. You know, I think everyone's kind of looking inward from the coaches and players and, you know, training staff and everyone. But at the end of the day, it's kind of, it's a group effort, and that's what makes a team a team. So I think I'd like to think this is just a small kind of hiccup in the road and just kind of a rough stretch of games, a rough month or so. And we all know that this club has the talent to turn it around and to have a good run down the stretch and hopefully a long playoff run. But you never know. Maybe this is a sign of something truly isn't right. And we'll have to wait in the coming weeks to see exactly what that is. But for now, I'd like to think that everyone's kind of looking inward. Everyone's looking at themselves. And that's really what you want. You don't want that kind of locker room culture where you're blaming someone else for the mistakes, because that's where it really starts to get cancerous. And that's where you almost reach a point where you can't come back from.
Fair enough. Did this first half of the season had lots of international call-ups, lots of injuries, and the loan spells. How odd is that for players to be sent back up to Oklahoma City or Tulsa, back and forth, and then players that get called in for camps but maybe not making the full squad for tournaments? Does that disrupt the training? Does that disrupt the match preparation?
I think absolutely having players go to national team camps. You also look at the heavy travel schedule earlier in the season for this team with Champions League and their 10-day stint in Argentina. I mean, it certainly wears on the players a lot. You want that consistency in training, and it's something we've talked about over the recent weeks with international call-ups for Gold Cup, and then those players come back and some of them go right into the All-Star break and representing there. And it's very tough to reach that consistency week in and week out with training, kind of instilling those tactics going into the weekend and all when your players are not there. It's been a very tough stretch, I think, because you have certain players that come back from those camps, the All-Star break and all that, and obviously they're quality players and you have to put them in the lineup, but it definitely at some points in the game might show that they're missing a little bit of training, they're missing that kind of camaraderie with their teammates. And so much of it over the course of a 90-minute game is knowing the instincts of your teammates, knowing where someone is going to be, and just the slightest momentary lapse can lead to a goal against. And I think it's those little momentary lapses that have maybe creeped in over the last few weeks, and that might be kind of the catalyst. I think by and large, we've seen some solid performances, lots of chances, and you want to see some more goals. But without a doubt, players being in and out of the lineup and in and out of Frisco alone is very tough. As far as the loans go, I mean, players that go up to Oklahoma City or even Tulsa now with Ja'Cory Hayes and Reggie Cannon, these guys they're sent up for the weekend. They're sent up to basically play the game, but they're brought back in training during the week. They're here in Frisco. I think it's tough on them to go up and join a new team kind of at the end of the week and play a game like that, but these are guys that are in training all week because Oscar and the rest of the staff love to have extra bodies around. They love to play the full-sided 11v11 games as opposed to some of the smaller-sided games that other teams like to have. So you have to have a lot of bodies to be able to do that. And it also gives you a better look at who's doing well. I mean, we've seen Ja'Cory Hayes go up in recent weeks and play games with Tulsa. And he's a player that, you know, I was sitting next to Fernando Clavijo tonight at training, and he was saying, wow, Ja'Cory looks so much stronger. He has so much more confidence just playing in these games. So it's tough, but it's almost one of those things that you have to do, especially as a young player, is to learn to adapt to that, because you have to get your games, but you also have to get your practice time in front of the head coaching staff and with the first team.
And then based off that coaching staff, let's talk a little bit more about them. If you listen to anybody talk about MLS, the first coaching staff they mention besides FC Dallas is maybe NYCFC, but beyond that, FC Dallas is pretty renowned for the entire structure. I'm just kind of curious, as a club itself, do analytics really factor into Pareja's match prep? Does he kind of have somebody that gives him a couple of sheets between whether it's what are some of the services out there that provide that advanced analytics, or is he more of a traditional South American coach that kind of relies on who's playing well in training and who's had good runs of form?
I think it's a little mix of both. He looks at the stat sheets. He looks at kind of the base level stuff and some of the easier stuff to kind of pick up on the overall form of the game and whatnot. But Oscar specifically, I mean, what's incredible about Oscar is he sits there and he cuts his own game film. He will watch back a game. He gets into Final Cut Pro on his MacBook and he physically cuts out game film, as does Jose Mabazan, as does Marco Ferruzzi. They all cut out kind of their own little sections. Marco's more focused on the defensive face and some of the set pieces, both for and against. And then Josema's focused on kind of the attack and some of the attacking side of the set pieces as well. And Oscar's kind of looking at the overall form, and each one of them kind of compiles their own stuff. They kind of piece it together and they go over it in video. But Oscar is very heavy into watching film more so than anything. He looks at the analytics, he looks at kind of statistics and all that, but he is heavily film driven to where the club films every practice and he goes back and watches practices back and he shows players in practice what's happening, what's not happening. And Kellen Acosta was doing an interview last week while we were in Kansas City, and someone had asked kind of what the difference was. It was more so about the development and kind of his coming up through the academy. And he said, you know, at FC Dallas, we watch training film like on training. We watch film about what we're doing in practice, and that's not something you get a whole lot of places. So I think there's a certain analytics side. There's definitely, it's not as robust as other clubs and diving into the numbers and all that. Oscar's much more of a traditional coach in that sense. But in terms of the preparation he does do, I mean, he sits there and he watches stuff over and over and over again, and he dissects every minute detail about training, about games. I mean, he'll go back up to his hotel room after a game and watch the game twice over before the team leaves in the morning, just because he wants to get a sense for what happened, a better look, and continually kind of look over and see if there's even the slightest thing he might have missed.
Sounds good. Dustin, do you want to ask some?
Sure, yeah. So Tristan and I, when we were coming up with the questions to ask you, he was very interested in things about the team, and I'm kind of more interested in kind of more meta things about the team, the players, and your experiences working for FC Dallas. So the first thing that I was curious about is, can you describe a typical away trip? Give us a sense of what that looks like to be a player or an employee of FC Dallas traveling with the team.
There are two different types of away trips, and the main difference is within kind of the first 12 to 24 hours. So for some of the shorter trips, like Kansas City, like Colorado, what have you, the team will train in Frisco on Friday morning, especially in the summer. That's kind of a departure from the night trainings that they like to do to acclimate to the heat. But they'll train about 9:30, kind of shower up, and then the team heads to the airport after that. On some of the trips, some of the longer trips like Vancouver, Toronto, Portland, and Seattle every now and then, the team will fly out on a Thursday evening after training, and then they will train in that city on Friday evening, kind of keeping that evening schedule going. But really, once a team is on the ground, there's everything is kind of a team meal. Meals are coordinated with the hotel and provided at the hotel. So you don't have players going out and kind of eating on the town or kind of responsible for their own diet. The diet is heavily guided by actual goalkeeping coach Drew Keeshan. He's the one who kind of helps dictate some of the road meals and kind of the nutrition that these guys are getting for the last 36 to 48 hours before a game. Every meal, like I said, is kind of at the hotel. So night before, you have dinner. kind of wake up in the morning. You usually have on game day, you'll have breakfast about 10 a.m. They'll do activation, which is just kind of running and stretching and getting the body moving about 11:30 or so. And then kind of pregame meal about 3:30. Give the guys a few hours between pregame meal and when the team actually leaves to go take a nap and do all that. And then the team will head to the stadium usually about 2 hours before the game. Depending on how far they're staying from the stadium, they like to get to the stadium right at 90 minutes before the game, just so everyone kind of gets in that routine and kind of has that sameness week in and week out. So from a team aspect, that's what that looks like for me. You know, a lot of it when I travel, a lot of my traveling, especially recently, is more as a PR contact. So whether we're training or whatnot, just kind of facilitating interviews, usually a lot of that is phone call based, whether we're sitting at the airport, because these guys travel commercial just like every Joe Schmo off the street. I mean, as part of the league, it's part of the league mandate and something that's under, I guess, debate right now, but that's just how it is. And so sometimes you get travel delays, sometimes you get all that, but a lot of my job is focused around setting up interviews. And then usually game days for me are pretty slow because all of our work is done in terms of pregame content and kind of getting the website ready. So game days are pretty light in the morning. I usually try and get out and see some of the cities that we're in, just kind of enjoy it for a few hours. And then I always, my kind of routine is I head over to the stadium early. I head with our equipment manager and our trainer. They go over about 3:30, 3:45 just to get the locker room set up, get everything set up. And I go just to kind of get out of the team's hair and then also just kind of be there and see some of these stadiums. You know, I've been lucky enough to be to about half of the league stadiums so far, almost every single one in the Western Conference. So it's fun to kind of get out and walk around. And then obviously in game day, it's kind of sending some video and photos back for social media during warmups or when the team arrives, kind of keeping tabs on the game in game and kind of writing our match recap for the website. And then afterwards, just helping facilitate interviews with road media or road team or what have you. And then head back to the hotel. We have a post-game meal, usually about 10:30, 11 o'clock. And then we're always one of the first flights out in the morning. So it's usually a very early alarm with 5 o'clock bus or a 4:30 bus after a late night and a late game. But it's just kind of, that's the routine that this group has fallen in. And a lot of people kind of look at the early morning flight and think, well, that's kind of weird. Why wouldn't you let the players sleep? But in all honesty, some of these guys can't sleep after games. They're so kind of driven on adrenaline and all that, that, you know, they may get an hour or two, but usually at 3, 4 a.m., they're still wired and ready to go just because that's their natural cycle. And so it's easier to kind of get back early in the morning, and then they kind of have all day Sunday to recuperate, to kind of sleep, kind of get stuff done that they need, and then right back at it on Monday or Tuesday, depending on the week.
It sounds super hectic, but it also sounds like it's provided quite a few once in a lifetime experiences for you.
Yeah, it's been great, especially when we were in Champions League. I was able to go to Panama. We were there for 3 days and then went straight to LA for the home or for the season opener. That's just a cool experience being in a foreign country. We didn't get out a whole lot, but just kind of being there and seeing the way things are done. And then obviously when we were preparing to go play Pachuca, we spent 8 days in Mexico. And so just being on the ground for 8 days, it was almost like a secondary training camp. And it was awesome just to be able to walk around and kind of see some of the smaller cities. We were about 2 hours outside of Mexico City. So kind of a smaller town in Puebla. And then we also trained at the at Puebla Stadium there, and, you know, a stadium that's hosted World Cup games back when Mexico hosted the World Cup way back when. And so it's just, those are great experiences that I never would have had without kind of some of the nice details of the job.
Awesome. So along those lines, what has been one of your favorite moments covering soccer, or, you know, you mentioned the Oklahoma City Barons, like what's been your favorite moment covering sports?
Oh man, I would have to say my favorite moment would be the Open Cup final last year. Been around a lot of teams, never really kind of won a national title like that, whether it was playing or working for teams or whatnot. That was kind of my first real experience And even as an office staff, we don't contribute a whole lot to that, but we're part of the team as well, and we take a vested interest in that. We take a lot of pride in that. So that was a really cool moment, especially being able to do it at home. The first trophy the club had won in, 19 years, just everything kind of that culminated in that night. That was just incredible, and by far kind of one of my top experiences. I got to be in LA when the team won the Supporter Shield, but that was kind of cool because we were standing behind the bench and keeping tabs on the Colorado game, and kind of there's 2 minutes left in stoppage time, and we were able to kind of relay the message to the coaching staff on the bench that, hey, the Colorado game's over, we won, like it doesn't matter, and just kind of to see them react. And it was a big moment for them, but it didn't have the full kind of ambiance of being at home and celebrating that trophy at home and parading the trophy around for an hour and a half after the game. It was a cool moment to win the Supporter Shield, but definitely winning the Open Cup at home was by and large one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of.
That was a good match. That was, I told everybody we had to go, and so Buddy and I went because I said Dallas teams don't win silverware very often, and so yes. It was nice to see that.
What about, so that's your favorite moment. What about your most embarrassing or the funniest moment that you've had covering sports?
Oh, man. It's been a lot of them.
I don't want to put you on the spot here.
In terms of embarrassing.
It could be embarrassing for you or for the person, somebody around you.
So I'll go first real quick, and you can, while you're thinking, but just the other day, mm-hmm. I just started a new job about a month ago. We have glass doors on all the offices. Definitely walked into a door face first. Still have a welt on the side of my head. So either you or a player I know has probably walked into a door or tripped on a water bottle.
Many, many occasions. Not one specific moment, but I every now and then I try and showcase a little of my non-existent soccer skills at training, especially on the road. When we train on the road, it's nice. I either go run around the field kind of while the team's training and get a little workout of my own or help kick the ball around. But every now and then I'll go to kick a ball or something, and it pretty much goes in the opposite direction that I was intending it to go. And of course, when you're around a bunch of guys that do that for a living and professionally, it's a lot of good ribbing when when you can't do even the simplest of tasks, because I played soccer until I was about 8 years old, like 90% of the United States. But that's for me where I get a little too confident, and I just have to bring myself back down to earth and say, oh, well, you're not going to be kicking the ball at training or trying to showcase any non-existent skills anytime soon.
We won't see a Carter bomb on the bench, is what you're trying to say.
No, although I have offered, I'm 6'6", so even though I can't move or kick a ball a whole lot, I could be a utility guy on the back line. When we were talking about Matt Hedges and Walker Zimmerman being called up earlier in the year and some injuries and some question marks, I said, I walked into Fernando Clavijo's office and I said, hey, if you need me, I'm here. We have a staff tournament once a year where everyone on the staff kind of breaks off into four teams, and it's kind of a round robin, and it's called Super Classico. I said, Fernando, you played on my Super Classico team last year. You can't deny my skill. I said, I might not be able to move, but I can give you a good 5 minutes and maybe win a header or two in the air.
You can
but
be like Walker Zimmerman coming in to play striker. You just go stand exactly. in the box and wait for some service sometimes, and just pop it in with your head.
I'll sit on the bench, and if I'm needed, I'm needed. I'm there to help the team just like everyone else.
All right. Well, I think that's all the questions we have for you about you and about the team as a whole. So let's transition into some questions about the players and try to get to know the players a little bit more. You said you're around them quite a bit. And, fans like us, just we really kind of just know them from what they do on the field and, maybe from the interviews where they're, all sweating all over the headset and just ready to get back into the locker room. So we're going to run through a couple of questions, and let's see if you can help us get to know the players a little bit better.
Okay.
Who is the funniest player and the practical joker of the bunch?
I would say
Walker Zimmerman is definitely the practical joker. That group of Walker, Ryan Hollingshead, Chris Seitz, Coy Kraft even, they all like to mess with each other a whole lot. But Walker's kind of the mastermind behind that. And they all love to pick on Coy a little bit because he's obviously the younger one. And he probably takes it the most seriously of anyone. But I would have to say Walker Zimmerman's probably one of the class clowns in that locker room.
Nice. Who has the dopest ride? Sorry, I'm really old. Or not old, but I'm not cool. Who has the coolest car?
In terms of players, they all kind of go after the same, you know, kind of sport car, good rims. Ryan Hollingshead has an old, I think it's a 2004 Honda Civic that he drives to work. It's kind of his to work and back car. It's quite a sight to see a professional soccer player driving around a car that's older than mine. And
that's awesome.
But in terms of best rides, it's no one even remotely close on the team. It is Fernando Clavijo himself. Has a probably not even 2-year-old Audi R8 right now. He will park it on the farthest side of the parking lot at work to A, avoid door dings. He will find any little bit of shade under the small trees around Toyota Stadium to try and protect that thing. And if there's a cloud in the sky, he will not drive it to work.
Please tell me you guys go and park right next to him.
Oh, I do. I actually did that last week. I took, we were driving around with Jesus Ferreira and we had a brand new Toyota Camry that we were kind of doing a test drive with him because he doesn't even have his driver's license yet. And so we backed the car. We backed the car literally maybe 3 inches away from Fernando's car. And I took a photo and sent it to him and said, look at my park job. And he was about ready to kill me. But he's very nice. He's let me drive it around the block once, just around the Toyota Soccer Center, not on any real roads. But he has this bad habit of he leaves his car keys in his door at the office when he unlocks his office in the morning, and they just sit there all day. So I tell him every day, you know, I'm going to walk by and I'm going to steal your keys one day just because you leave them here like it's nothing. And so every now and then I'll go and I'll jingle him a little bit, or I'll start to pull the key out to where he can hear it in his office, and he comes sprinting out the door. Like, hey, you're not taking my keys. I'm like, hey, I told you plenty of times, if your keys are here, they're going to go. So, but no, Fernando, the players have some nice rides, but Fernando's ride is definitely number one on the list.
Nice. Who's the best dressed?
I have to give best dressed to Roland Lamas. And I have to preface best dressed with most exotically dressed. He comes in with some of the most off the wall outfits I've ever seen. He came in with one day. It was like cheetah print and it had like a pink crown embroidered on it. It was just a t-shirt. He wore it to training one day. And the team was going over video in the locker room. They had a projector screen that drops down on one side. And someone, they were all in training gear already. Someone took his jersey or his shirt that he wore in, this absolutely ridiculous shirt, and hung it up kind of behind the screen in one of the lockers. And they're doing this whole thing, you know, looking at video 30 minutes before practice. And then at the end of the video session, the assistant coach, Marco Ferruzzi, was kind of did this whole huge spiel of, all right, guys, you know, that's the end of video, but we have a special gift for you on behalf of the Hunt family and everyone here at FC Dallas. We'd like to introduce you to our alternate kit coming up, beginning with this weekend's match. And the screen raises and it's Roland Lamas' just leopard print shirt with a big king crown on it. And the whole locker room was just dying, laughing and going nuts. And so there's a lot of guys, especially the South American guys, that have a lot of style. But Roland Lamas, his stuff is out there to where I make it a point to see what he's wearing in just so I can either shake my head or be like, where on earth did you get that?
That's hilarious. Okay. So our last question for you is, who's the most likely to take your job?
Oh, most likely to take my job. I will say that, not to use the same guy in two responses, not Roland Lamont, Walker Zimmerman, he's got some broadcasting chops in his future, I think, or Chris Seitz. Chris Seitz has kind of the mind to be on the broadcasting side of things, but I think Walker has definitely the most interest in it. I think he, when we've done stuff with him before, talking to him, he definitely has an interest in a post soccer kind of broadcasting or media career of some type. But there's a lot of guys in that room that can do it. But I think Walker has shown maybe the most interest, at least that I've seen, especially from some of the English guys.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing him on one of the pregame.
FC Dallas Extra Time, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I saw him on one of those, and he seemed like a total natural. I can totally see that one.
Absolutely.
So you used to be able to say Stephen Keel, but now...
Now Stephen Keel actually has my job at the league level.
He's league-wide.
Yes. No, Stephen Keel is great. We see him at events all the time, and he still comes up. He gives FC Dallas some extra love. You saw it kind of in the All-Star game. I think there was a post that some of the players were walking out, and Kellen Acosta walked up and, like, gave him a hug or said hello, and just completely ignored that Keel was holding a camera and recording the whole thing. But, yeah, it's... Stephen Keel has done well for himself, but you always knew he had that personality, and something along those lines was in his future.
Nice, nice. All right, Carter. Well, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. And we look forward to hopefully getting off to a better second half of the season on Wednesday night. And thanks for making yourself available.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Carter.
All right.
You were listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick.
All right, so that was Carter Baum joining us for a few minutes tonight to give us a little bit of an inside look at the club and how they're dealing with this drop in form over the past couple of weeks. I, for one, found it pretty interesting to know some of the personalities behind the scenes. I also think it's kind of cool to hear that Coy Kraft's getting noticed for his hard work and training. For those of you who are like me that like to see the younger players get the runouts, to get the accolades, so to speak, at the youth level and then show their stuff on the senior side, that definitely looks like Coy Kraft could be one of those names that you start hearing a little bit more of. Hopefully somebody gets on the score sheet on Wednesday night. We've got a big match against Houston Dynamo, the final installment of the Texas Derby. Winner gets the Texas Cannon. Right now, if you had to put money on it, I'd say that Houston's having a better run of form, but they're just coming off a 2-1 loss all the way out in Vancouver. So they've got basically twice as far of a trip coming back to Texas. Dustin, what do you think? Do we have a chance to maybe right the ship and get 3 points as opposed to just a draw?
Well, you know, that's a tough one. My heart says, yes, we're going to do it. The reality is, if we draw, they keep the cannon since they already have it. And if they win, they get it, obviously. So, you know, I want to think that we do get on the score sheet, but I also think that we'll let one in. I think we'll probably have a 1-1 draw, and I think we do not get to keep the cannon this year.
Gotcha.
Don't hate.
No, that's a fairly reasonable prediction. I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic and just go ahead and say that we get a 2-1 victory. I think Coleman finally gets on the end of one, bags a goal or two, and I think Acosta has a big match, and it really is told to kind of unleash the offense. And maybe Diaz gets back in there and at least gets a run out, if not a start. So those would be my predictions. No inside knowledge beyond what I just heard from Carter. So hopefully the match goes a little bit better than it did these past couple weeks and our defense plays better. I think I want to see better covering, obviously better marking on the set pieces. Definitely. That'll be the
I'll tell you what I want to see.
Key to the match.
I want to see on our set pieces. I want to see the crosses or the, especially on the corners. I want to see the corners clear the first man.
Yeah, there's a lot of direct corners that were really low. In soccer, what you really want to do is make use of the height on set pieces, and when you deliver these low corners for people to run onto, which is sometimes common with the more technical sides like FC Dallas, that really defeats the purpose of having some of those taller players up there for set pieces. I think Hedges last year had like 3 or 4 goals, all off set pieces and just being in the right place at the right time. And you're
but
right.
You can't get that if they don't, the ball doesn't make it into the box.
That's right. They were going all over the place this weekend, but the one place they weren't going was into the middle. Another big match from Jesse Gonzalez would be nice. But again, if the defense does their job and keeps the ball out of danger, then I think they should be good to go. No silly or stupid fouls. And for the love of God, no video assistant review. I cannot watch another match that has the guy drawing the box after any play. So
that really gets under your skin, doesn't it?
Well, it goes back to what we said when we previewed it a month or two ago, that I'm great with it as long as it's done well. And there were these huge articles on ESPN FC about...
I was talking about the referee making the box sign.
I mean, I don't mind the box. I think it's kind of funny. But the whole concept just bugs me right now, because there were article after article from Howard Webb, who's in charge of the MLS officiating, basically saying our referees are going to be the best in all of FIFA land at using VAR. And sure enough, it's come back to haunt FC Dallas greatly. And it's just caused some really confusing things. I will still give them the benefit of a doubt, but it is becoming a whole topic in and of itself across the league with regards to how players approach the match. And honestly, I think some players just kind of throw their hands up and say, I don't know what's going on.
Carter, if you're listening, you can thank us later for not asking you VAR questions.
Exactly. That is one thing I will not do, because I'm sure that he feels one way and doesn't want to publicly state it. But at the same time, I know the players are frustrated because they show it on the field. And not just because it's going against them, but because some of the decisions are inexplicable, rather. So no VAR,
for sure.
And I think we'll be good to go for a good match. So that's going to be on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock Central Time in Frisco, Texas at Toyota Stadium.
Well, let's hope that there's people in the stands.
Yeah, this will be weird. It's back to a school week, so the youngsters may not be able to make it to the match. Hopefully with a Friday or with a 7 p.m. kickoff, parents still come on out. Toyota Stadium gets warm, so I can understand if people don't want to have the late summer night. But yeah, no, I think that's one thing that the club definitely needs is a big crowd.
All right. Okay, and last piece of shopkeeping information here. Last week we gave you guys a trivia question, and that question is, our new signing Luis Gonzalez is Venezuelan. Name the other two Venezuelan players in FC Dallas / Dallas Burn history. There's a little bit of a clue there. There are two. So nobody answered correctly, and so we're going to roll it. And this time, if you answer it correctly, you get two shout-outs, and we're going to keep...
Double bonus points.
That's right. Extra super bonus, and it's going to keep rolling up, and you might get 15 shout-outs if you wait long enough. But please don't do that. Just answer, and so we can move on.
Sounds good. We look forward to hearing you guys. You can follow us on Twitter, at Dallas Soccer Show, at Tristan Vick, and at DNish.
It's
underscore 96.
At D underscore Naish, NAISH. It's a high school nickname that my friends gave
me. There you
go. So D underscore Naish. All right. So follow us, tell your friends about our show, and we will catch you next week.
Catch Carter Baum as well on FCDallas.com.
Yes. And he is at Carter Baum, BAUM, on Twitter as well. So give him a follow. And yes. All right, Tristan, have a good week.
See ya.